Thank you, Domati. It's 10:11. This is John in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Lots to talk about on the show today, and lots of news to keep you abreast of. Lou Manfredini was making fun of me because last night I was seen and photographed around Wrigley Field with a bunch of folks that were there for the Lady Gaga concert. I live close enough to Wrigley Field that I can head on over to the concerts, whoever's playing. And if you stand in front of the firehouse on Waveland Avenue, where they hit the home runs onto, and look back towards the center field scoreboard, the giant video board they have now, you can actually see projected on the screen, as they do, the concert footage. So you can hear really well, and you can see just at a sliver of an angle if you stand on the side, and there's a bunch of us. Well, I've done that for Billy Joel, and we did that for Green Day and so forth. All the concerts that are at Wrigley Field, I can hear, and we go over and kind of just see what the scene is like. It's fun. Nobody has been as loud, and no crowd has been as big or awesome as the Lady Gaga crowd. Holy cow, was that place packed. And the concert was really loud, and it was fun. So I was pushing my near-crippled wiener dog around in the G7 Action Doggy Stroller, now with mesh canopy, and we took a picture of it because I'm now that guy. And it's humiliating, and it's emasculating, and it's embarrassing, but it's the only way my dog can get around, and we like to get around, so we take the dog with us in the aforementioned G7 Action Doggy Stroller with the mesh canopy. And every now and then, you know, you like to post pictures of your kids or your dog, so there it is. Lou chose today's show to make fun of that and has demoted me from a 12-ounce hammer to a 6-ounce hammer. That's fine. That's fine. I'm comfortable enough with who I am as a person that I can live with that. So then we came home from the Lady Gaga show. And I don't know, we don't normally watch CNN, and we sure don't watch it on a weekend, but we knew about the hurricane, and we thought, well, let's watch the hurricane coverage. And who did CNN have stationed to cover the hurricane but Martin Savage, who they had virtually lashed to a tree? Did you watch CNN at all last night? It was the classic, it's dangerous out here. The winds are 130 miles an hour. Shards of glass are whipping through at Mach 2 speed. They'll cut your head off if you're out here. Don't go out in the rain or hurricane. In fact, let's go to our man who is out in the hurricane. And there was Martin Savage.
Right. Fighting for his dear life. Pinned to a tree.
Totally, totally. And what a great name, Martin Savage. Savage. Let's go to the Savage man out in the hurricane. Savage, how is it? It's Savage out here. And I know Martin Savage. He and I worked in Peoria, Illinois years ago. He was an up-and-coming TV guy. I was an up-and-coming radio guy. He did the evening news. I did the evening radio talk show at the same station. He was as handsome and as sure a bet as there ever was to make it to the big time. Beautiful clothes. I mean, we were in Peoria. He was immaculately dressed. And he had that anchor voice. Think Ron Burgundy, but a little smarter. That was Martin Savage. And so there we were toiling away in Peoria, and you knew someday Martin was going to be on CNN. My wife said to me, I wonder if this is a good assignment or a bad one. Is this like you've made it, or actually you've got the short straw? We're going to send you to Texas for Hurricane 4, a Cat 4 hurricane. A hurricane so strong, and CNN makes this mistake all the time. They can't help themselves. All we can do is love them. But when they get something like this, they absolutely make it as bad or extreme as possible. So much so that they kept repeating about every 5 minutes, now we're just telling people to write your name and social security number on your forearm. They kept saying that last night. Write your name and social security number on your forearm. The point being, when your body washes ashore, we'll know who you were and we'll be able to tell your family. That's what they were doing. And they kept saying, and it just seemed a little dramatic, particularly since Martin was standing there and he didn't seem to have anything written on his forearm. But there he was just getting belted. And I think that's pretty cool. America was watching the hurricane. We tuned in to watch the hurricane show. Unfortunately for Martin last night, what was happening was they'd say, let's go to Martin. And you'd see this whoosh, and his head would be down, and he's got the CNN wind slicker on. He's going, don't go out here. It's dangerous. I'm risking my life. And they say, we'll get right back to you, Martin. North Korea just launched 3 missiles. And then they do like 4 seconds of that, and then they go back to Martin, and he's saying, well, as I was saying, they go, just 1 second, Gorka has resigned or been fired as a Trump advisor. Now let's go back to Martin. And then they say, hold on 1 second, Martin. The president just pardoned Sheriff Joe. And then you could see Martin look deflated because now he knows he's going to stand in a Cat 4 hurricane and they're not going to go to him. Now he's on page 2. So they went back to him every now and then. And each time he was alive, props to you, Mr. Savage, but he just wasn't getting the sort of marquee time that he knew he was going to get. I mean, his underwear had to have been soaked. So he's getting pummeled, and they keep doing the Sheriff Arpaio story. And clearly, Arpaio was the bigger story. Clearly, the president's pardoning Sheriff Arpaio trumped that. Yeah, maybe it's a tough call. I mean, Arpaio's story is maybe more interesting, more inflammatory, but you do have the strongest hurricane to come since, I don't know, and what did they say? Since 1970-something or another. We looked this up. When Hurricane Katrina hit, different location, different phenomenon. But Sam, do you remember how many people perished when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans? What would you guess? What would your ballpark recollection be? Because it was terrible. But
57.
57 people died. Domati, how many people died when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans?
I cannot remember.
1,857.
What?
Jeez.
Holy shnikey.
Wow.
Wow.
So I don't know exactly how they're counting that. Is it, well, you know, people that literally drowned in the surge or got hit by debris or other related things like hospitals weren't able to provide the care, so people that were in trauma but might have been saved. You know, I don't know how they came up with 1,800 people with Hurricane Katrina or what the timeline of that was. But we talked to a meteorologist yesterday at Fox 26 in Houston, and he said, well, John, he said, one of the problems is down here in Texas, New Orleans too, people love their pickup trucks. An F-150 is no match for a Category 5 or 4 hurricane. And what they do is they think they can outrun it or they can eventually get away, but they stay too long. And then those lightweight pickup trucks get washed away into the ravine, into the river, into the street, and people drown literally trying to escape in their pickup trucks or whatever. I could see that happening. But Sheriff Joe was the big story last night. And the Arizona Republican, which while not a newspaper that did not endorse Donald Trump for president, that made news, has virtually every other Republican since there were Republicans. The name of the paper is the Arizona Republican. Make no mistake about this. The Arizona Republican is a major American conservative newspaper. And their editorial this morning is this. While America was talking about tearing down monuments that offended historically oppressed people, Donald Trump effectively erected yet another one. His pardon of Joe Arpaio elevated the disgraced former Maricopa County sheriff to monument status among the immigration hardliners and nationalists in Trump's base. This erases any doubt about whether Trump meant to empower them after the violence in Charlottesville. Arpaio is their darling. Arpaio is now back on his pedestal thanks to their president. A federal court found Arpaio in criminal contempt for ignoring a judge's order in a long-running case over racial profiling of Latino motorists. Many will characterize it as a slap to the Latino community, and it is. The vast majority of Latinos in Arizona are not undocumented, yet they fell under the heightened scrutiny of Arpaio as he honed his image. The pardon was a sign of pure contempt for every American who believes in the rule of law. They conclude with this. After Trump was elected, many hoped he would abandon his habit of appealing to the worst instincts of disaffected white Americans who have been left behind by the economic changes that had little to do with undocumented immigration. Many hoped Trump would decide to become the president of all the people, but by pardoning Arpaio, Trump made it clear that institutional racism is not just okay with him, it is a goal. And that from the largest newspaper in Arizona and a major American conservative font. Stunning. It's 10:21. As I said, lots to get to today. I want to talk just a little bit more about the sports of the weekend and the fight that's coming up tonight. Sam, you'll explain to me who to root for and why I should care after 10:30, if that's okay with
you.
Cool. And I posted something on my Facebook page this week that I thought was just a one-off. Did you see the McDonald's commercial? It's been running for a while, where the kid gets college tuition assistance and everybody claps for him. I posted that video because it made me cry. I put it on my Facebook page. I came back a few days later, and there were pages of comments. 70,000 people were interacting with it. I said, you've got to be kidding me. I'll play the commercial, and we'll talk about what happened on my Facebook page a little later on. Right now, though, I want to give you a chance just to tell me what you think of the president's pardoning of Arpaio. And as Dean Richards would so well say, maybe tomorrow morning, I want to hear from both sides. I'm not taking a stand on this. I maybe already have, but I want to hear what you have to say. Were you shocked and disappointed, or are you pleased that the president pardoned Arpaio? One other thing I paraphrased, well, I just edited because we didn't have that much time, the Arizona Republic editorial. But one other note that they made clear in their editorial was that this was even before he was sentenced. It's possible that Arpaio, while guilty, would not have been sentenced. They could have not put him in jail. They could have as well. But some folks thought that the president was going to wait on his pardon until at least he saw if the guy was imprisoned or not. But even before that may or may happen, I don't even know if they're going to sentence him now, because what's the point? It's going to be commuted. The president has pardoned him. But even before the process played out, the president intervened. He made it his point to pardon Joe Arpaio. I'm asking you what you think about that. Although Lisa wanted to say something about the hurricane coverage, too. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air. What can I do for you?
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
What's up?
Just real quick, I wanted to first say thank you for bringing up that issue with Martin and the reporting, because I think for the last 15 years, it's been such a source of contention for me, and I've never heard anyone comment. I mean, when they have these hurricanes, they put nationwide these people out there,
yeah. And
it's so dangerous, as if we don't know what wind looks like. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's dramatic. I mean, it does personalize a storm to see somebody in harm's way, but it's so contradictory. You can't help but laugh.
Yeah, and think it's just ridiculous, and just as ridiculous as what's going on. Of course, in the White House, I feel what he did with Arpaio is completely outrageous, while not at all shocking, sadly, because it's just another thing you can add to the list of what's going on, and just the utter disregard or even, you know, lack of this emotional intelligence to know the temperature of the country with everything that happened in Charlottesville, and, you know, just as a human being to know timing-wise, I mean, let alone just the absurdity that he even did it, is just maddening, really.
That's an interesting point. The timing is maybe unfortunate, not only relative to Charlottesville, but relative to Harvey. I mean, there we all are trying to just get our heads around what poor Martin Savage was going through in the hurricane, and then he drops that into the storm. Like, we don't have enough on our plate right now.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just so one thing after another. You can't even get ahead of it.
Lisa, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate your listening. I'll go from Lisa to Robert. All our lines are busy. We'll take a few calls here and then the news. Hey, Robert, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. I was raised by my grandfather. My grandfather would call the current president, even though I hope for the best, because remember, he's our president.
Yep.
He doesn't do good. We don't do good.
You want him to do well. You're absolutely right.
But my grandfather would call him a boob. Okay? But we also have to take into context that our previous president pardoned a whole bunch of crack addicts, crack dealers that actually killed people in the last couple of months of his term. So the previous president did a lot of boobish things, too.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about that in CNN's coverage last night. They were acrimonious. They just could not believe it. They were outraged. I get it. I was too. I was disappointed. Maybe not shocked, but disappointed. But one reference that they didn't make was that all presidents pardon people. And people that get pardoned generally did something wrong, right? Remember the riches for Clinton or Bush or Obama? Everybody pardons somebody. Usually they do it on the way out the door. I don't blame them for that. But normally the pardons happen when they're leaving office. That he did it 6 months in, as the previous caller said, when our temperature is so high right now is off-putting, right? But he's not the only president to do it. So clearly, somebody's always done something wrong, and then a president always says, yeah, but we're going to let this one go for now. You've served enough time, or I'm going to use my privilege here. So that's not unique in this case, if nothing else the timing is, or if nothing else the person is. But Robert, I appreciate your call. That's an interesting point. And some of you feel like the previous caller, that actually not like the previous two callers, that it was a good idea. So that's the way it goes. It's 10:31. We're late for the news. We'll do that next on WGN. Thank you, Doma T. By the way, we were playing a little Lady Gaga a moment ago. For my money, the greatest performance ever by Lady Gaga was... the Super Bowl. Remember in the glimmering red pantsuit, the red eyeliner? I watched it again today. She hits the note just as the Blue Angels rock it over. Just once I want to do something where the Blue Angels rock it over. I want to come in, I want to come into the studio and time it. All right, Blue Angels, here's the deal. I'm going to come into the studio, and when I walk in and say hi,
my hair is standing up.
Oh, my gosh.
Arms.
You had Whitney Houston, you've got Jimi Hendrix, you've got some of the great performances of all time. I will not be persuaded that that's not the best public performance of our national anthem ever. It was just perfect. And the video makes it, the visual makes it so much more powerful.
Lady Gaga doesn't get her just due as a vocalist.
I don't think so. I saw her the first time she was at Lollapalooza, and I thought, whatever. It was all performance. But maybe she was a great singer then, but we've come to appreciate that a lot more since. I'll say that. Yeah
pop singing kind of makes you tamp down your vocal ability a bit.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's well put. Listen, we took some calls before the break. We read the editorial from the Arizona Republican about how the president pardoning Joe Arpaio was unfortunate. And some of you called in with a different view. We didn't hear their voices. So let's just get one on anyway. Hey, William, it's John, and I know you wanted to say something. Thanks for listening. What did you want to say?
Hi, John. I support Trump's decision to pardon Arpaio.
Sure. Why do you say that?
I believe Arpaio was correct in interrogating Mexican people, racial profiling them. When you're trying to seek out illegal aliens in the state of Texas and you're the sheriff, who would you interrogate? Japanese, Chinese, Europeans?
Yeah, well, you know, the problem, though, with this, is that whatever you think or whatever the sheriff thought, sort of beside the point, the courts decided that what he was doing was illegal. The courts said you can't do that, and for 17 months he still did.
Yes, and when Obama...
No, we're not talking about Obama. We're saying the courts said... you can't do that anymore. So we have rule of law in this country. If you break the law and you're found guilty of it, then you have to pay the price. There's consequences. The judge said this is against the law. He issued a court order for him to stop, and for over a year he did not. So I don't know how you get around that. I mean, no, whatever.
I'm saying you're being hypocritical because Obama did the same thing by defying the laws of the United States and saying that illegal aliens can go throughout the country and do whatever they feel like.
You know, I'm not only am I not talking about President Obama, I'm just telling you this is what the court said. If the courts, this is the point. I mean, if Joe Arpaio had been pulling people over for eating ice cream cones and a judge said that, it's not what he pulled them over for, who they were. At the end of the day, it's here's what the court said. This is the law of the land in the United States. Why do we let O.J. Simpson go? Because we have an imperfect system and it said, we find you not guilty of murder. And then even though everybody said O.J. should go to jail, we didn't put O.J. in jail. If the judge says, if the courts say you can't do that, then you have to stop doing it, and they continue to do it. That's the point. William, I appreciate your call. It's 10:43. We're having a nice Saturday here, and I don't want to get into an argument with everybody on both sides, so let's move on. I was watching the Cubs game yesterday and some other games, and I was a little off-put by the uniforms and the nicknames on the back of the uniforms. I believe that this weekend, Sam, is nickname weekend and
Players Weekend.
Players Weekend. Does any sport ask the athletes to wear more costumes than Major League Baseball?
Nope.
I mean, I know they got 162 games in the regular season, so they have plenty of opportunity. But what's just the matter with the gray or the pinstripes, you know?
Follow the money, John. Follow the money.
So explain that to me. How does this matter?
Well, they're selling these jerseys, too, on MLB.com. So you can buy the jerseys, like the replica jerseys. Like Ben Zobrist, for example, wears number 18. Instead of saying Zobrist above his number, it says Zorilla, his nickname, Zorilla. Chris Bryant, his number 17, above the 17, instead of Bryant, it says KB. Carl Edwards, it says Carl's Jr. We go to the south side, Jose Abreu. Instead of saying Abreu, it says Mal Tiempo. Chris Beck, instead of saying Beck, it says Bubba, and so on and so forth. So they were able to pick the name that goes above the number for the entire weekend. They have a personalized jersey, a personalized patch on the jersey, and then all of them are doing personalized shoes, too, shoes and spikes. Just a chance to make money. They'll auction a lot of this stuff off, too, for charity, I assume, as well. But this is just more of a cash grab for Major League Baseball.
Well, I guess that's MLB's choice. It's just that I want the Cubs to focus on baseball. I don't want them to have theme travel trips where they all wear silly outfits. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, doggone it, can we just play baseball? I'm not a grumpy old man. But I just think it's sometimes...
Well, this is league-wide, remember. This is a league-wide Players Weekend.
Yeah.
So it's not just a kooky Joe Madden production.
By the way, so...
He did dye his hair, by the way. I texted you yesterday.
I noticed. Well, one of our callers last Saturday said...
It was on Monday.
Was it on Monday show when you were visiting with us? A lady just called in and said, what's with Joe's hair? I think he's using a product. And lo and behold, the Tribune outed him. So the Tribune also did a funny thing, though. Since it was theme weekend, they said, all right, let's list the best Chicago sports nicknames of all time. And I think they did a very good job on this. Greatest Chicago sports nickname of a player is, what would you say? Who comes to mind?
Kid K, Kerry Wood. I like that one.
Not even on their list of the top 20.
Really? I love Kid K. The Big Hurt has to be up there.
That's number three. And that is a good one. I think the criteria for having a great sports nickname in Chicago is that you have to have been a great athlete in Chicago.
Okay, Air Jordan.
That's number six. Sweetness is number five.
Walter Payton.
Shoeless Joe is number four. Mm-hmm. Big Hurts, three, Frank Thomas. Number two, Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks.
Which sport? What sport's number one?
Football. Bears.
The Punky QB.
Nope. Same team.
Refrigerator Perry.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, William the Refrigerator. And that is a great nickname. And that is, and he was a, we love the fridge. You know, he didn't have a long career. It's kind of sad afterwards. He was working construction crews down south, but maybe because he wanted. The Golden Jet is number seven. No Neck Williams is eight. Storm and Norman Van Leer. I love that one. That so fit him for the Bulls. Peanut Tillman. Three Finger Mordecai Brown, Papa Bear George Halas, the Galloping Ghost Red Grange. I'm doing all this to get to my favorite sports nickname of all time. They said was number 14 because he was one of my favorite players of all time, Bob Butterbean Love.
Oh yeah,
he was so silky smooth. He was so liquid. He was butter. He was Bob Butterbean. He was Butterbean Love. I don't even know if that's the origin of it, but that sure was his nickname, and it always seemed to fit for me. I love that guy's game. Iron Mike Dicka is also on the list. And only one player who you have not yet mentioned was on their list of the top 20. In all of our four big franchises, five teams, only one current player is on the list.
Only one current player.
In a moment, you've got time to think. Don't cheat. Tell me who has the best current sports nickname. Remember, you have to be current, and you have to be a really good player to get noticed. And it has to be one that people know, love, and revere. Who is it? What is it? In a minute, the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast. The gang kicks around once again what the status of poor old Italo Balbo is going to be in Chicago. That's not going away. And the governor's handling or mishandling of a political cartoon. Surprised that thing has legs. And the legacy of a broadcaster named, not General Lee. What's Lee's first name?
Robert Lee.
Robert Lee. Yeah.
The Asian American Robert Lee.
That one. Oh, my gosh. Mm. I heard that story and thought, that's fake news. That's an onion. That's an onion story. ESPN fires Robert Lee. They didn't fire him, but they wouldn't let him do the University of Virginia football game because it would look bad to have Robert Lee coming back to
Virginia. They didn't want him to take over Charlottesville again.
I still think ESPN did the right thing. If they began the broadcast with, good afternoon, everybody, live from Virginia, I'm Robert Lee, and boop, everybody suddenly has a problem. They would go, oh my God, are you kidding me? You got a million broadcasters. We don't know who Robert Lee is. You couldn't have given him the pit game, for crying out loud. Get somebody else to do the game. We get it. He's not a bad guy. But just to avoid the distraction, don't have Robert Lee do the University of Virginia game after Charlottesville.
From the beginning, you mean?
From the beginning.
From the beginning.
Now that
I think they got those assignments, though, back in July.
They could not have known, so they pulled him in and they said, hey, listen, let's talk about this. And they were all in agreement that it would be just best to avoid the zoo. An ESPN executive said the best way to avoid the zoo is to not go to the zoo. Let's just not even go there. They went there. More about all of that with the Mincing Rascals after 11 o'clock. Should I care about the Floyd Mayweather? Oh, by the way, let's do the nickname thing. Number one current nickname of all Chicago sports athletes is?
Well, process of elimination. It's nobody on the Bears.
Affirmative.
Nobody on the Bulls.
Affirmative.
I can't imagine it's anybody on the White Sox either.
Right.
And I don't think Anthony Rizzo has a good nickname, so I'll go hockey, three Stanley Cups, Captain Sirius.
That's it. Ding, ding, ding.
Okay. I mean, just process of elimination.
Yeah. Really, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because when you think of our favorite great athletes with great nicknames, none of them are playing right now. Maybe time is necessary for us to appreciate them and their nickname after the fact, but we don't have anybody we love right now. Everybody called him the Fridge when he was playing. Everybody called him the Punky QB when he was playing. Butterbean had the ball when he was playing, but all we have right now is Captain Sirius.
Well, you know Derek what never Rose stuck for me? Black Mamba.
Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, what were you going to say, though, Derrick Rose?
No, well, like, the nicknames now, I don't want to say they're boring, but Derrick Rose's nickname was D-Rose.
I know, and Riz for Rizzo
is... And Chris Bryant is KB.
I know, that's not a nickname.
So it's just not as
that's
fun.
That's an abbreviation.
It's not as fun.
No, it doesn't conjure up your persona like the refrigerator did.
Derrick's nickname when he was a kid growing up and playing in high school was Pooh. Because a family member, I think it was an aunt or a grandma, called him Pooh. Like, I like Pooh. It's better than D. Rose.
That tells you a little something about him. Yeah, right.
No, P-O-O-H, like Winnie the Pooh.
Okay. Tell me who I should root for, or should I even care about this fight tonight?
Domati actually said this to me, and I think it's totally true. There's never been anything like this. This is beyond boxing. It's beyond mixed martial arts. It's a hybrid fight between two guys from different sports. You've got an aging, some would say over-the-hill Floyd Mayweather at 40, a young, cocky, arrogant Conor McGregor at 28. I don't know what to expect, and I think that's why I'm excited.
McGregor's not a boxer, though, right?
No, he's a mixed martial artist. He's never fought with shoes on.
So that's because he's used to kicking as well, right?
Yes, and you can't kick Mayweather in the head. That's not legal.
So this will be a boxing match,
boxing
though.
Rules.
So why do they think that McGregor will be able to outbox a great boxer?
I don't think it'll happen either. I mean, I think Floyd's going to toy with the guy the whole time. But they have said that McGregor has a very powerful, not only counterpunch, but he's got knockout capability. And if he's aggressive enough, he can come at Floyd, which a lot of fighters are hesitant to do because Floyd is one of the best defensive boxers ever. You know, it's tough to touch him. You can't get a jab on him. You can't lay an uppercut on him. But they feel like McGregor is aggressive enough and young enough because this isn't Floyd in his prime, right? He's 40 years old. He's not at the top of his game right now, and he hasn't even fought in 2 years. So if there's a time to get him, it's now. That being said, though, I mean, Domati, you said it too. I mean, it's so tough to even get near Floyd no matter who you are. You can't even touch the guy.
And while Floyd was training for this fight, McGregor was learning how to fight. He was learning how to box. You know what I mean? It's a whole different skill set. I just don't see how he can pull it out.
Do we like one of these boxers better than the other, or fighters?
They both are. Oh, as fighters, okay.
Well, I mean, as guys, is one of them
They're both terrible guys.
Really?
I don't like either of them.
There's no good guy in this fight.
I don't like either of them.
How much money is somebody going to make on this thing?
So ESPN reports that Mayweather's purse is $100 million. Guaranteed. McGregor, minimum $30 million. If he wins, he obviously gets more.
I read somewhere that if McGregor wins, since he's the underdog on this, more money's going to change hands than on any other fight, or the payout's going to be bigger or something.
It would be the worst day in the history of Las Vegas. No, I've actually had on our podcast on Chicken Dinner, we had a couple sportsbook guys on, and they said if Conor McGregor wins this fight, because when the odds opened up in Vegas, the initial line, Mayweather was a 2,500 favorite, minus 2,500.
Wow.
That was then bet down to like minus 1,000. Now it's about minus 5, minus 600. But people in boxing bettors, the boxing public, they don't bet favorites. They're not going to lay $1,000 to win 100. But when you see Conor McGregor, ooh, I can bet 100 to win 800, you'll do that. And that's what the sportsbook guys at Vegas were telling us. All these people are walking up. 90% of the tickets in Vegas are on Conor McGregor.
It's 10:58. We'll pause here, update you on the news. More sports and the Mincing Rascals still to come. On Michigan Avenue on Thursdays, we record a podcast called The Mincing Rascals. I invite you to download that or listen to it on our website, WGNradio.com, or just subscribe to The Mincing Rascals wherever you get your finer podcasts. We kick around a variety of topics each week with Kristen McQuarrie on the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune. She could not join us this week, but the rest of the regular crew will be there. That is, you'll hear our Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, Eric Zorn, the columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and the editorial cartoonist Scott Stantis, which is helpful because the gang was talking this week about, in part, an editorial cartoon that the governor doesn't want to touch with a 10-foot pole. We also talked about Italo Balbo, the famous Italian aviator. We have a street named after him. We have a column in his honor. Balbo is a big name in Chicago history. It's honored and revered. But because we are rethinking every monument in America today, I'm not kidding, that thing might go down. And so Scott Stantis said,
Balbo's a weird story. I mean, to be perfectly clear, Balbo was a black shirt who was worked towards getting Mussolini elevated to and making Italy a fascist state. That's irrefutable. He was.
Here's what we're up against. John mentioned this on his show yesterday in passing. And within 5 minutes, one of the Italian organizers in the city who was out of town at the time had received a call, placed a call, and was on John's show.
Defending Balbo.
So if this isn't like taking on the skinheads or the KKK. If they take on Balbo, man, there's going to be a fight in the streets of Chicago.
Well, Italians are organized and angry.
Here's what I don't understand about the whole Balbo thing, which is I certainly understand the desire of Italians and Italian Americans to have places of honor for their people in the city. There are so many Italian Americans who have given more and are more prominent in Chicago than Balbo. Balbo came here once. He flew over, right? This is part of the...
He brought a squadron. It was probably pretty awesome.
It was a pretty...
The
century
president
of progress.
Greeted him. The president greeted him.
Right, right. But I'm saying that it would not be unthinkable
the
to
president
say...
The president then, not the president now.
They were showing off military abilities they would later use in World War II, right, against us?
But it just doesn't strike me as being... I mean, there's Enrico Fermi. There's a number of prominent Italian... Ron... I wrote about this. This is not a new issue, by the way. I wrote about this several years ago, and
Balbo,
I got to say about Balbo exactly, and I even did a reader poll, and the readers, by a large margin, wanted to be Ron Santo. Now, I can't remember if Ron was dying or had just died. There was a lot of sentiment for Ron Santo as a great Italian-American
figure. Eric, you don't get to decide. You're not.
I'm going to say, I get to decide. The people. John, this is the people.
No,
this
but
is
you
the
need
vote.
To focus on Balbo per se.
Okay. So are we talking statue or street?
Well, it's not a statue. It's a column.
It's a column.
It's a pretty major thoroughfare.
I don't think it matters what the thing is, a street, a column, a statue, an obelisk. If there's something in his honor, then we need to have that conversation.
And I think you do need to talk about why are we honoring him, and on balance, is he someone that we want to honor?
Well, who's the we in this, for one thing?
The people, the citizens of Chicago.
Okay, so who is the keeper of the citizens of Chicago, or the Italian-American citizens of Chicago?
Don't do it.
The president of that society says that you don't know Balbo's story.
I don't think the Italian American community gets to decide whether or not the city of Chicago honors Balbo. I mean, they're going to have a voice in this, but the city council and the people of Chicago, I mean, through their representatives on the council, are going to decide whether this is something that we want to continue to honor.
Yeah.
It seems fair enough to me, doesn't it?
Okay, but could you be persuaded that it's not as black and white as you make it out to be?
Nobody is as black and white as we make them out to be. Everyone has flaws. Everyone in history has flaws.
Okay,
right? And we've talked about Washington and Jefferson were slave owners and so on. The question to me becomes, on balance, what is it that we remember this person for?
Okay.
What is it that we honor them for?
Okay, but again, John seemed to be channeling the president there, and I'll support him a little bit, because where does this stop then? Because sure, you can make a case. You can make a case against Balbo, but you can also make the case that it's been there for, what, 60 years or more than that? And so when do we stop doing it? When do we stop looking at people's names?
There's this mob mentality out there.
And it becomes this groupthink that it doesn't serve us well.
I think you're right.
I think it's different. I think it's different if you're – just real quick, Scott. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I think it's different if you're –
Jeez, no.
Come on, John.
Sorry.
There's a difference, I think, if you are African-American and a member of a group that was actively discriminated against just 50 years ago, making a case against statues being – standing than there is about, I don't know, people who fought in World War II, or I don't know. There must be some difference there. I mean,
you're talking about the time.
Well, I think the aggrieved is more directly in the shadow of those statues than are some of the others.
Well, let me take an easy one. There's some things that were named for Dennis Hastert out in the far west suburbs. I think all of those names were taken off. There was a wrestling tournament, maybe some buildings. I mean, instantly we did that, right? Was that wrong?
I think if you're doing it instantly or more quickly related to the moment of the offense, that has more legitimacy than if you're revisiting something that you've driven up and down for 80 years.
Yeah, but then there's the danger of sort of having this spontaneous gut emotional reaction to it without actually stepping back and having a clear perspective.
Right. I don't think it's wrong, pardon me, to reevaluate things from time to time, and because there's different information becomes available, there becomes different sensibilities. I would say with the Balbo statue, replace it with Christopher Columbus.
There you go.
And of course, that leads us into the story. Alderman Pouar, who's running for governor, Mayor Pouar, has suggested that we rename Columbus Day Indigenous Peoples Day. This is not a brand new idea,
no.
But it's new for here. I guess apparently he introduced this a year or two ago in the council, and it just died in committee.
Well, I guess if it's good for the goose, then it's good for the gander. We need to whitewash any Italian-Americans from Chicago's history who have blemishes.
But Scott, John, we're not – I just reflexively disagree with Scott, so I apologize for that. It's not whitewashing history to take down an honor to someone. I mean, I think there's a difference between a monument or a statue is not history.
I've been very inarticulate so far, but let me try it one more time. When does a statue that was put up to honor someone become an event in its own? And by saying that, I'm saying, you know, you might have erected this statue to Balbo, and maybe that was a mistake at the time, but you did it. And now for 50 years, people have been married around it. They've picnicked under it. When does it become its own thing and not that for which it was posted?
Its own issue.
It's a good thing. That's true.
It's a fair question.
And having
really
lived in the South for many, many years, I can tell you that many of the statues down there were erected during to reinforce Jim Crow, to reinforce segregation. They were put up. They weren't put up to honor Robert E. Lee.
But that's
not
how they. But that's not the place they've come to inhabit since then. If that was the motive then, today a lot of people have felt that the South's love affair with their Confederate past was akin to Southern pride. It wasn't anti-African-American or anti-civil rights.
Many of those actually were constructed to oppose civil rights.
But my argument, Scott, is that while that was the origin of them, that was anti-civil rights, that's not the place that it inhabits today.
Okay, but you can understand why that
wasn't how I read those.
But you can understand why there's now an added offense to that statue, not just that it was General Lee, but that it was put up is an anti-civil rights monument. So that's a double whammy.
Okay.
That doesn't stand the test.
Yeah, so a friend of mine who's a public historian said that every monument has two stories. One is the story of the person who the monument is of, but also the story of the people who put up the monument.
Right.
And those two stories are intertwined in every monument.
Don't you almost think that the latter is more important? It's why did you put it up? If you put up a statue of Confederate soldiers to thumb your nose at the Civil Rights Movement, that's almost more important than who General Lee was.
And admittedly, that makes the Balbo statue more ambiguous because it was not put up to honor his service as a fascist aviator. It was put up to honor this incredible trip that he took across the seas with his fleet of airplanes, right?
Okay, so let's leave this way then. What's the matter,
Steve? Go ahead.
Can I tell you one other Robert Lee factoid that blows my mind this week because I thought it was from The Onion?
He's not calling the Virginia football game?
That's insanity.
Okay, so ESPN does an online stream. This isn't the ESPN main channel broadcast, but you could stream the games online. And Virginia's going to play a smaller school. And the online stream broadcast of that was going to be done by a guy named Robert Lee.
Who's Asian.
He's Asian American, hence the name Lee. He was pulled from that game. He agreed. Okay, so isn't that insane, right? But then you read ESPN's version of that story, and it's not so insane. But that really is where we are as a country.
I read about that. You know, I have to say that it was like a parody of liberalism. I cringed when I read about that.
Yeah.
But, oh, my
yeah.
goodness. What? Really?
I'll be here to defend ESPN partially. Wow. Why didn't they just do it? I don't understand the statement of it. No one would have noticed. I can understand why. Why put a guy in that position at that football game? They moved him to a different game.
Right.
Why didn't they just move him? You know,
Youngstown
put someone else
State
in.
Pittsburgh tilt. So
well,
he's doing that game.
It's a
now.
Pit game.
Oh, no, it's a big game.
Right. So, I mean, but you see my point. They might have just switched announcers and not even raised the issue, just made it happen. I think with the statement is what opened the milk to ridicule.
Well, let's do then what is going on with Governor Rauner, because he's being criticized for not condemning quickly or forcefully enough a cartoon by the IPI, the Illinois Policy Institute.
Which is his farm team. Eric Gallie is the cartoonist's name, by the way.
It shows an African-American child begging on the street. A white man, a tycoon-type character, says, "Sorry, kid, I'm broke," but his pockets are stuffed with TIF notes. So evidently he's got some money or is getting some sort of financial exchange. And there's the kid saying, "Could I have some money?" Presumably for the schools. People are angry at the governor for not criticizing that racist cartoon.
And I don't know if you're aware because it's late now, but four of the members' communication staff were fired or resigned.
Well, I thought it was now it's up to 10.
It was a huge purge. And it was all based on apparently the governor was out of state taking a child to college. I'm not sure how this worked out, but his communications department put out a statement. I don't think it was in the first person. I think it was saying, "Governor Rauner, as a white man, will have no further comment." This made news all over the world, I think. It was just such a foot-and-mouth kind of statement. And he apparently flew off the handle and fired the whole lot of them.
And I want to jump in if you've seen the cartoon.
Talk about that, Scott.
It was, seriously, it was just, if you're going to draw a typical child from CPS, it's going to be African-American. So it happens to be an African-American kid. And the guy he's talking, who's holding up a sign like he's begging for money, the big, fat, rich millionaire guy with the cigar. You look at it.
Do you have a problem with the cartoon?
I don't. Steve had the best solution. Have three kids there holding the sign and asking for money, then you don't have the solution.
When you're drawing a cartoon like this, you want to have a certain effect, and you don't want to have another effect. Like you say, when you're drawing, if you were drawing that cartoon, you might think, as you might look at this and go, "You know what? I can draw this as a black child, but that's going to create a fuss that will distract from my point. So instead, I'll either make as your cartoon this morning, racially ambiguous, or maybe a couple of kids of different races."
Yeah,
because you want to make your point, but you don't want to
distract from
part
your
of
point.
The point, though?
I mean,
isn't that
a,
part of
well,
the
part
point?
Of the point was that African-American kids in the Chicago school system are being getting short shrift because the funding isn't there when, in fact, the money is available and it's just not being given to the schools. So that was the point of the cartoon. And, in fact, the people who are most up in arms about this are the ones that the cartoon is actually defending and saying that minority communities in the city of Chicago are getting short shrift in terms of funding. That's the point of the cartoon. But all they saw was this. And they also saw it as an opportunity to do a couple things. Go after Illinois Policy Institute, which is a very conservative think tank. And
when you first saw that cartoon, did you go, uh-oh, no, red flag problem? Well, did you, Eric? Did that jump out at you?
I didn't see it until after I knew there was a controversy
this, but,
about it.
All right, so you saw it late. But still, what did you think when
well,
you first
I mean,
saw it?
I thought I understood the point. I mean, I don't think actually that the cartoonist understands exactly how TIFFs work and why this isn't. But that's beside the point. My thought was I didn't. You know, the drawing of the African-American child, he's got large lips. But and Scott made the point, we talked about this in our meeting this morning, Scott made the point that this is how he draws a lot of people, right? This is
yeah.
not, you exaggerate features. But again, I would guess as a cartoonist that you would just have to, every time you draw, you have to think, what's the point I'm trying to make and what's the point I don't want to make? What's the
exactly.
controversy I don't want to raise?
What about you, Steve? When you first saw it, what did you think?
You know, I only saw it in the, through the filter of the news, so yeah. I don't think it'd be fair.
Well, when
to
I first saw it, you would have had to explain to me the offense. I mean, when I see that poor kid sitting on the street asking for money for the schools, I didn't think that was an illogical representation of the students of the Chicago public school system who are asking for money and aren't getting it.
And in fact, in the context of the cartoon, that kid's the victim.
Scott Stantis is the editorial cartoonist, that last voice you hear there for the Chicago Tribune. Eric Zorn, Chicago Tribune columnist. You hear him weekdays sometimes with our Bill and Wendy. And then Steve Bertrand, of course, from WGN Radio News. He also does the noontime business hour. It's 11:26 on WGN. I know a couple of you want to get a word in edgewise, but that's the Mincing Rascals. And it's a podcast we broadcast in part here on my Saturday show. You can hear it each week. We post it Thursday afternoons at WGNradio.com or download it for free wherever you get your finer podcasts. It's called The Mincing Rascals. Incidentally, we were talking about Robert Lee broadcasting the UVA game. Sheila had an observation about that. I hadn't heard this. Hey, Sheila, it's John.
Yep, John.
What do you know?
Well, I think what happened was that Kellyanne Conway, communications director for the White House, was the one who first tweeted this. Now, how she found out about it, I don't know. But then that got picked up, of course, by the right, and it was just, I think it just went viral from there.
Seriously? Kellyanne Conway? Because we were wondering if they had done this quietly, there would be no offense, no harm, nobody would have been the wiser. But, you know, we're all making it out of to be more than it is, and it's only because it got out there. Kellyanne was the one that pushed that first?
I think so, and I think as a result of, you know, the brouhaha then that, of course, erupted when it looked so bad,
yeah.
That's when ESPN had to come out with the statement, and I agree with you that once you read what they wrote or how they wrote it, it kind of puts it in context and it's not really quite as egregious as certainly she made it sound.
They sat him down and said, listen, dude, this game is scheduled long before any of this went down. How do you feel about it, Robert Lee? We'll have you do the Pitt game instead of the Virginia game. And he goes, yeah, that's probably a good idea. Then we don't even have to address it. And they all said, ready,
exactly.
Break. And then this goes on.
Yeah,
interesting.
Because you deal with it, you know, while he's broadcasting and people start calling in and then, you know, then that becomes a big mess. Or do you just kind of quietly give him an option to do something else, which I think was their goal.
I guarantee you, if Robert Lee did the Virginia game, people would have said, oh, what is this ESPN taking a side on a volatile issue that they don't need to be involved in? They could have given this game to anybody else. Blah, 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 blah,
You're
blah.
Probably right. Exactly.
Thanks for the call, Sheila.
You're welcome.
Have a good day. I appreciate your listening. 11:43. Thank you, Domati, Sam. John Williams here. This is WGN Radio. Did you see they've got a new app to get Hamilton tickets? This was in the Chicago Sun Crimes this week.
You cry.
Beginning tomorrow, you can enter the hashtag Ham for Ham lottery. That's where you get those lottery tickets.
Remember we made an arrangement.
Under the new system, the Chicago Lottery will open at 11 a.m. 2 days prior to the intended performance. It closes 9 a.m. the day prior to the performance for that lottery. So the first new lottery registration will be online through the new app at 6 p.m. August 27th for the 29th show. So for 2 days in advance, instead of standing in line, you can go to the app and see if you can get the discount tickets and get tickets at all. Each ticket through the special lottery remains at $10, with 44 lottery tickets allotted for each performance. So you want to get the new HamiltonBroadway.com app. That's where you search, HamiltonBroadway.com app. You can get in line, if you will, for Hamilton tickets. And then, ding, you find out if you win them. That's a better system. I don't know why they didn't think of this a long time ago. Cost you $10, and you get to go to the show if you're lucky. Anthony, you're on WGN. We were talking about honorary statues, and you wanted to say something about that. What's on your mind, Anthony?
Hey, guys. I was just thinking that it's so hard to sit and go back and try to, you know, in time and determine whether somebody's worthy today of being honored. Why not just base them on the time they were alive? Were they doing something when they were alive that was considered unaccepted or wrong? I mean, you can't have a crystal ball. I'm sure if we took, for example, the transgender situation back to 1700, they would have an issue with that and consider these people wrong. I mean, you just can't, it's impossible to do. So, I mean, if they were considered good people while they were alive, why mess with that?
That's interesting. Somebody pointed out to me in an email this week that Martin Luther King was not for gay marriage. Well, we've moved past that point. So are we going to, you know, fault him for that? But it's a religious belief that some still hold, including his daughter, and the times were different then. That's I don't know that that's a perfect system, but that's an interesting way to consider it, Anthony.
And I also wanted to mention, regarding the slavery issue, which is a terrible time in our history, but do you know that I don't care who your ancestors are, whether you're of Roman descent, Greek, Macedonian, Persian, Mayan, Incan, everybody has been a slave at some point or another in their history. I just wanted to throw that out there. You know, nobody has escaped that, you know, since human beings have been on the planet.
Hadn't thought about it that way either. Anthony, working hard at home. Thanks for your phone call. It's 11:45. Okay, something completely different. You got that McDonald's commercial ready, Lise? So, I was watching TV. This commercial's been around for a while. It was a 30-second McDonald's ad, right? It's a manager comes in. A young man comes in. He's African-American. He comes into the kitchen area of a McDonald's, and he has a letter in his hand that he's too nervous to open. He gives it to the store manager. He says, I've got it here. And it's, is he going to get, we've discovered, into college or not? And McDonald's has a tuition assistance program. So it's a big moment for this young man, and it's a big moment for his colleagues there in the restaurant.
Fries for $3.16, please. Thank you.
David, what's going on?
Oh, hey.
That's it?
Yeah. Everybody, 2 seconds.
Dear Sebastian, after careful consideration of your application, it is with great pleasure that we offer our congratulations on your acceptance.
Through the tuition assistance program, every day, McDonald's helps more people go to college. It's part of our commitment to being America's best first job.
America's best first job. Every time I see that, just now I got goosebumps. I got that little tingly thing in my nose you get sometimes. Every time I see that commercial, I want to go out and buy some fries. Thank you, McDonald's, for helping these people. So I just posted that just as a sort of one-off. And then I came back a few days later, 70,000 something or another's later. I'm like, holy cow, what are you people talking about? So I started to read the comments on my Facebook page after I posted that. Mary said, okay, but what about the part where it says McDonald's, America's best first job? Many people who work there have families they're trying to support on first job wages. Sharon said, I've seen this commercial a couple times. I think it's awesome. Kathy said, it was my first job. Laura said, really? I keep seeing kiosks taking cashier jobs away. Bad enough people can't count change. Now I got to deal with a computer. Janelle said, my first job was at McDonald's. The owner found personal gratification at belittling every single worker there. Lissa said, and they chose to have the manager be white and the workers black because... Beth said, I've seen this a few times and I just smile. Brigitte said, it was my first job and I had the best manager. It gave me a great work ethic. If you have time to learn, you have time to clean. George said, my first job in high school, I attribute a lot of my success to the organization's skills I picked up while working there. Everything had a system, process. Everything I do, I set up as a system. And once I perfect it, I never deviate. It works for me. Ginger said, way to go, McDonald's. Randy said, hooray for McDonald's. What's wrong with people who can't just be happy for this young man getting into college? I, for one, am proud for this young man and all those who applauded for him, which was nice to see. I know it's a commercial, it's a fiction, but it was nice to see that everybody was as excited for this kid as he was. Kathy said, this is so wrong. You guys do know they're just shoving a false face by this commercial. This isn't how they truly are. My husband worked for them, and they actually gave him a hard time because he was in college. Ann said, I loved it too, John. Juan said, they should first stop making junk food. Lisa said, I worked at McDonald's for 5 years. I loved it. Amy said, they have a very good training program. It teaches discipline and organization. Ted said, sure, all you got to do is work 3 jobs. John said, my 16-year-old nephew works there, his first job. David said, McDonald's does give kids an opportunity to be hired in the workforce. Good on them. I do like this commercial. I just posted it because I thought it was fun and touching and a good thing. I didn't know this was a can of worms, a shake, something. David said, McDonald's does give kids an opportunity to be hired. Cheryl said, it was one of my first jobs. To this day, whenever anyone at work requests something of me, I make sure to respond and acknowledge the request, thanks to my training at McDonald's. David, some people choose the fast food industry as a first job, a temporary gig or whatever. I chose working at a fast food restaurant 17 years ago as a means of having spending money and to pay auto insurance. I loved what I did. Minimum wage was only $5.15 an hour. And it goes back and forth like that. Some of you seeing joy in it and some of you not. I never worked at a McDonald's. I did work at a restaurant. Domati, Sam, did either of you ever work? Oh, Bob's in the newsroom now. Hey, Kessler, did you ever work at a fast food joint?
I worked at a coffee shop for a little bit, but that was it.
I'll tell you what, everybody should have a fast food job. And I'm not even getting into, should that be the way you support your family? What about that? My own personal attitude is those jobs are I don't think it's fair to criticize McDonald's for not paying a wage that a family can live on, since that's not the way it's designed. But never mind that. Everybody benefits from having a job making shakes.
It's character building.
Or washing dishes. I was the busboy at a restaurant, and I think that's one of the best work experiences I ever had. It's 11:50. You may have something to say next. Looking at some of the coverage of the devastation after Harvey swept through, landed as a Category 4. I guess, Bob, you'll do the news here in a second, but I think it's Category 1 now, Harvey?
Yeah, it's died down, but now there's this, you know, the flooding problem. So the governor of Texas was supposed to start giving a news conference in the last 10 minutes, but looks like they're still waiting for that to happen.
So the rain is still coming down. Yeah. Some folks getting 10, some folks getting over 30 inches of rain. Think about that. We dealt with 2 inches of rain and the streets shut down. 10, 20, 30, 40 inches of rain. Man. 75 mile an hour winds, I guess, now. I'm looking at, you know, one thing that's fortunate at least is that Corpus Christi isn't Houston or Dallas or even New Orleans. So while it's not a small town, it's not as heavily populated as some other places. I guess there's a place called Harvey in Texas. There's a story about a couple who a couple of years ago planned to get married and they had a terrible tropical storm. And so they had to cancel their wedding. So then they scheduled it for last year. But there was still some fallout from the damage from this storm, so they scheduled their wedding for this weekend. So they've got, like, you know, roast beef and potato salad for a couple hundred people again. This is the third time they've tried to get married. And once again, the water has shut them out. They said they're going to get married in Vegas because they don't expect a flood there.
Good call. They're going to have a great marriage because they've been through so much.
I know, and they still want to get married. You know, that's what you should do. If you really know if he or she are the right person for you, you should do one of two things, survive a hurricane or wallpaper a bathroom. Brenda and I did that once early in our relationship, and I thought, wow, I've not had these feelings about you before, and yet I still want to marry you. If you can wallpaper a bathroom, you should get married.
John Williams wallpaper the bathroom test.
Just one of my little rules
of
counselors,
life. A couple counselors do that.
I know what you're thinking. John, do you have any other wisdom for us? Here's another one. You should institute the mortgage rule with your kids. When the kids say, well, why can't I? Or, well, you're not fair, you're the worst dad ever. Just go, wait a minute, I know. Let's get out the mortgage. The mortgage rule is this. You get out a piece of paper. It's called the mortgage. And you go, oh, look, your name's not on there.